Okay, so let's just jump right in. It's late February 2026, and if you haven't looked at a calendar lately, or if you've just been completely heads down in your own work, you might have actually missed the fact that the tectonic plates of the tech world have just shifted, like
Oh,
massively.
absolutely. It's a seismic shift.
Yeah, and we are looking at this new report coming out of the war room at Tick and Garage today.
The title alone, honestly, it gave me pause. It's called The Architecture of Digital Sovereignty.
It's a heavy title, right? But honestly, it's completely accurate because what we're seeing right now, just this week, it isn't just another standard tech announcement. It
Right.
isn't just, a new headset or a slightly faster phone or another chatbot wrapper. This is a fundamental geopolitical power shift. Because for the last 2 decades, really since the whole dot-com boom when we talked about the future of the internet or AI, we looked west. We looked at Silicon Valley.
Seattle, California.
Exactly. We looked at those hubs. Right, that has always been the default setting. The assumption was just that, well, innovation happens over there and the rest of the world just sort of downloads the update later.
Exactly. But what this Tech and Garage report highlights, and it does it with some pretty startling data, I have to say, is that the center of gravity is moving to the Eastern Hemisphere. Specifically, we are looking at this new strategic alliance between the UAE and India.
And the key takeaway here for you listening is that they aren't just playing catch up anymore. They aren't just trying to copy the Western model. They're setting a completely new standard.
Yeah, and the numbers here are, frankly, they're mind-boggling.
They really are. We're going to get into the actual hardware specs in a minute, but the gist of it is this. We have two massive simultaneous developments happening right now in 2026 that represent what the report calls a new order.
Right.
On one side, you have the engine, this deployment of raw, just unbridled computing power in India. And then on the other side, you have the brakes, this incredibly sophisticated, strict ethical control system being rolled out in the UAE.
And that right there is the fascinating dynamic, because usually in tech history, you get speed without safety.
Like the early social media era, move fast and break things.
Exactly. Move fast and break things. Or on the flip side, you get safety that totally stifles speed, which is how a lot of people tend to view heavy regulation.
Yeah.
But the mission of our deep dive today is to understand how these two nations are trying to do both of those things at the exact same time. They're essentially building a new digital superstructure.
So let's start with the engine. The source material talks about this massive project involving the UAE's G42 group, the Mohammed bin Zayed University of Artificial Intelligence, which is a bit of a mouthful. So let's just stick with MBZ UAI for now and Cerebras Systems. They've all converged in Delhi.
Right, and in the capital.
Yeah. And they've turned on something that the report calls the 8 exaflop beast.
Beast is really the only word for it, honestly. To put 8 exaflops into perspective, we are talking about 8 quintillion calculations per second.
I can't even visualize a quintillion. It sounds like a made-up number kids use on the playground.
It really does. It's a one followed by 18 zeros. Let's try to like humanize that for a second. Imagine every single person on Earth, all 8 billion of us, we're all holding a calculator. And imagine we all do one calculation per second nonstop, without taking a break, without sleeping, for 4 entire years.
Just punching numbers every second.
Exactly. This machine does that exact amount of math in one single second.
That is terrifyingly fast.
It is. It's a scale of math that human brains just aren't really designed to comprehend. But what makes this specific machine interesting, and what the report really drills down into, isn't just the raw speed itself. It's the actual architecture. This is where Cerebras comes into the picture.
Yeah, because the report mentions something about a wafer scale engine. How is that fundamentally different from the supercomputers we're used to hearing about, like the massive ones in the US national labs?
So traditional supercomputers, the kind that have basically dominated the top 500 lists for years and years, they're usually built by linking thousands and thousands of individual graphics processing units or GPUs together. You take a chip that's maybe about the size of a postage stamp, and you wire it to another one and another one until you have literally a warehouse full of them.
Right, that's the cluster approach everyone talks about.
Exactly. But think about the logistics of that for a minute. Imagine trying to coordinate a project with 10,000 different workers sitting in 10,000 different cubicles. They have to send messages back and forth constantly just to stay in sync.
Right, like, hey, did you finish that part of the math? Okay, send me the result so I can do my part.
Precisely. That communication takes time, it creates latency.
The commute for the data slows the whole thing down because even at the speed of light, wire resistance and actual physical distance matter when you're doing quintillions of calculations.
That's exactly it. Yeah. So Cerebras basically flipped that entire logic on its head. Instead of cutting the silicon wafer into thousands of tiny separate chips, they built what is essentially one giant chip, the wafer scale engine. It's about the size of a dinner plate. And because it's all one single piece of continuous silicon, it allows for near instantaneous data transfer. The data doesn't have to travel across all these wires between different metal server boxes. Mm-hmm. It's all happening right there on one massive silicon plate.
So it's like taking all those 10,000 workers out of their cubicles and putting them in the exact same room, sitting around the same massive conference table.
Exactly. No emails, no phone calls, just instant, immediate collaboration. And that extreme efficiency is crucial because of what they're actually training on this beast. They've launched a model called NANDA 87B.
NANDA 87B, that's the large language model, right? The AI itself.
Yes, it has 87 billion parameters. Now, to be fair, in 2026, 87 billion isn't the absolute largest number of parameters we've ever seen globally.
Sure.
But the parameter count isn't the real headline here. The headline is what this model is designed for. The report describes NANDA as a linguistic bridge. It has been engineered specifically from the ground up to understand the deep cultural and dialectal nuances of Hindi and English.
Which is huge, especially considering just how complex Hindi is and how many regional variations and dialects exist across the subcontinent.
It's critical infrastructure. Think about it. Most of the foundational models developed in the West are trained primarily on the Western internet.
Right.
So they are amazing at English. They're decent at Spanish or French. But when you get into the real nuance of Hindi dialects or, you know, the specific way business is actually done in Delhi or Mumbai or rural Uttar Pradesh, those Western models just fall apart. They completely lack the cultural context.
It's like trying to use a cheap tourist phrase book to write a complex legal contract. It's just not going to work.
That is the perfect analogy. If you really want to fuel serious economic growth in India, you cannot rely on a model that was trained solely on Reddit threads from California.
Right. You need something local.
You need a model that inherently understands the local context, the regional idioms, the unspoken rules of how people communicate there. Mm. NANDA is designed to be that exact engine. It's about making AI natively accessible and useful for the Indian economy, not just for English speakers sitting in Western tech hubs.
But here is where it gets really interesting for me going through this report. It's not just about building a ridiculously fast computer and a culturally smart chatbot. It's about where the actual data lives. The report calls this the red line.
Yeah, the red line. This is the concept of data residency. And honestly, it is the absolute cornerstone of what the authors call digital sovereignty. Think about the old way, the old world of tech, if you will.
Okay.
Developing nations would generate massive, massive amounts of data. User behavior, financial records, health data, you name it. And they would essentially just export it.
Export it, like shipping it overseas.
Exactly. They'd send all that raw data to servers in California or Virginia or Dublin just to be processed by big tech. It was, in many ways, a form of resource extraction.
Basically shipping out their raw materials, their digital crude oil, to be refined somewhere else, and then having to buy back the finished gasoline at a premium.
Exactly. The report actually uses a very specific phrase for this. It calls it digital colonialism.
Wow, digital colonialism, that's a heavy term.
It is. But this new G42 India alliance has completely flipped that script. Their agreement explicitly states that every single byte of data and the physical hardware itself must remain entirely within Indian borders.
So Silicon Valley doesn't get to peek inside the box at all?
No, not at all. This is sovereign AI. It ensures that national security protocols, private financial records of citizens, citizen identity databases, all of that is managed in a completely isolated environment that is governed strictly by local Indian laws. It basically creates a massive, impenetrable firewall against foreign jurisdiction.
And obviously, we're just reporting what's in the document here, but that framing of digital colonialism really makes you think about how vulnerable a country is if it relies entirely on foreign tech to run its basic infrastructure.
It's a massive vulnerability. If the diplomatic winds suddenly change, or if there's a new trade war, your digital lights could go out, figuratively or even literally. By keeping the entire infrastructure physically on Indian soil, the government maintains absolute sovereignty over its own future. They aren't renting their tech from the West anymore. They own it.
And it seems like they're actively trying to make sure this immense power isn't just hoarded by the government or by a few massive corporations. The report spends a lot of time talking about democratizing this computing power.
Yes, this is what they call the public-private utility model. Usually, a supercomputer this powerful is a walled garden. It's locked away for the exclusive private use of whichever massive company built it, Google, Microsoft, whoever.
Right, it's their proprietary advantage.
But under this specific partnership, access to the 8 exaflop system is actually granted to Indian startups, research universities, and government bodies at a tiny fraction of what global cloud computing costs usually are.
So if I'm a startup founder sitting in Bangalore right now, I don't have to pay those massive Amazon, AWS, or Microsoft Azure premiums just to access world-class compute power.
Exactly. You get access to the beast for pennies on the dollar relative to standard global rates. And the report highlights that we're already seeing the results of this. They mention these specific bottom-up innovation use cases.
Like what?
Well, for example, you have agricultural startups using this insane compute power to accurately predict local crop cycles by analyzing hyperlocal weather data. You have healthcare labs processing huge data sets to identify early stage diseases in rural populations, places where there might not even be a human doctor for 100 miles in any direction.
See, that is the difference between AI as a fun novelty toy and AI as a foundational tool. It completely shifts India from being just a consumer of algorithms, you know, just scrolling through social feeds designed in San Francisco, to actually being a primary producer of global solutions.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that new production capability is completely backed by Abu Dhabi Strategic Capital. It's an incredibly potent mix, but, and this is a really big, but infinite speed is incredibly dangerous without any control.
Right.
An 8 exaflop engine without a steering wheel is just a very, very expensive crash waiting to happen.
Which brings us perfectly to the brakes. While India is busy revving the engine to the red line, the UAE, specifically the Central Bank of the UAE, or CBUAE, is laying down the law.
And they really aren't messing around here.
Yeah.
In late February 2026, at the exact same time the hardware went live in Delhi, the CBUAE issued this landmark directive for licensed financial institutions.
Okay.
We're talking about the big banks, the major insurers, digital payment providers.
The report literally calls this part a regulatory earthquake.
It really is an earthquake. The governor of the central bank, Khalid Mohammed Balama, made the core sentiment very clear in the official documentation. He stated that innovation absolutely cannot compromise financial stability or consumer trust, period. The primary goal is a totally secure environment for digital transformation, because they realized that if you just let AI run completely wild in the financial sector, you risk a catastrophic systemic collapse.
So what does this actually look like on the ground? Because usually when people talk about AI regulation, it's super vague. It's usually just some white paper saying, oh, we should be careful and ethical. But the report lists some very concrete pillars of this new law. The first one that really jumped out at me was senior management accountability.
Yes. This is officially the death of the black box excuse.
Explain that for us. What's the black box excuse?
For years, if an AI algorithm did something wrong, say, it systematically denied mortgages to a whole specific demographic of people, or it executed a rogue trade that lost millions of dollars, the executives at the top would just throw their hands up.
Right.
They'd say, we didn't know. The algorithm is a black box. It's machine learning. It's too complex. We don't actually understand how it makes its decisions.
The computer did it, Your Honor, not me.
Exactly. The UAE has legally closed that loophole. Under these new laws, boards of directors and senior management are personally and legally responsible for the outcomes of their AI systems. If the code fails, or if it causes a systemic loss, the human leadership takes the blame.
Wow. So if I'm sitting on a corporate board in Dubai, I suddenly care a lot more about what the engineering team's algorithm is actually doing. I'm not just going to blindly sign off on a new AI deployment just because it promises a 10% bump in quarterly profit.
Exactly. It completely forces due diligence. It forces rigorous governance and makes ethical auditing a serious boardroom issue, not just a problem for the IT department to figure out later.
Yeah.
You simply cannot just deploy an AI and pray it works out anymore. You have to deeply understand the tool you are using.
And that leads right into the next major pillar in the report, algorithmic neutrality. This is all about handling bias.
Right. We've known for a long time that AI systems can be horribly biased. Because if you train a model on historical human data, and that history contains racism or sexism or classism, the model will just quietly repeat and scale those patterns. It doesn't know any better. It's just math to the machine.
It's just predicting the next most likely outcome based on flawed history.
Exactly. But the CBUAE has now strictly mandated anti-bias protocols. Systems must be rigorously tested before deployment to ensure they absolutely do not discriminate based on race, gender, religion, or social status.
And the report makes it clear this isn't just a corporate nice-to-have policy anymore.
No, it's a hard legal requirement. Fairness in credit scoring and calculating insurance premiums is now the law of the land. If your shiny new AI charges someone a higher premium for car insurance simply because of their ethnicity or their zip code, your institution is actively breaking the law. It demands that these financial giants mathematically prove their algorithms are fair before they are allowed to turn them on.
That is a massive operational shift for big banks. And connected directly to that is the pillar of transparency. I actually love this part, the idea that the consumer has an absolute right to know what's happening.
Full disclosure, it sounds like a simple concept, but in the tech world, it's revolutionary. Customers must be explicitly told when they are interacting with an AI.
So no more customer service bots pretending to be human agents named Steve.
Right, no more deception. And even more importantly, if an AI system makes a material decision about your life, like denying your credit card application, the institution has to provide a clear, human-readable explanation of exactly how and why that decision was made.
So the days of computer says no are over.
Completely over.
Yeah.
You have to explain why the computer said no. Was it the applicant's debt-to-income ratio? Was it a missed payment from 3 years ago? The bank has to show its work. And that directly links to what is perhaps the most advanced consumer protection in this entire regulatory framework, the opt-out clause.
Yes, the meaningful human intervention requirement. When I read this part, it honestly blew my mind.
It's a total game changer for consumer rights. Customers in the UAE now have a legal right to demand a manual human review of any AI-driven decision.
Wow.
If a machine algorithm automatically denies your small business loan, you have the legal right to say, stop, I want a real human being to look at my file.
That effectively halts full, unchecked automation in any high-stakes financial decision. You always have to maintain a human in the loop, ready to step in if the customer simply asks for it.
Exactly. It restores ultimate agency to the consumer. And the report notes that this specifically prevents what the central bank calls predatory AI.
Which is what, exactly?
Predatory AI is using highly targeted algorithms to find financially vulnerable people and aggressively push high-interest loan products or risky debt structures onto them. The directive is crystal clear on this point. AI must be utilized as a tool for financial inclusion, not a weapon for algorithmic exploitation.
It's basically privacy by design and security by design, but completely baked into the national law.
Yes. And if we pull back and connect all of this to the bigger picture, look at what these two nations have actually done here. They haven't just bought a bunch of expensive new technology. They have created an entirely new philosophy for the digital age.
Yeah, the tech and verdict section at the very end of the report calls this combination a new digital superstructure.
Think about the synthesis of these two things. On one side, you have India providing absolute computing power. 8 exaflops, strictly localized data, perfectly sovereign hardware.
The engine.
The engine. And on the exact other side, you have the UAE providing human-centric algorithmic ethics. Strict accountability, legal neutrality, mandatory human review.
The brakes, working in perfect sync with the engine.
Exactly. And for you listening, here is the ultimate. So what of this entire deep dive? Why should you care about this if you live and work in New York or London or Tokyo?
Right. How does this impact the West?
Because if you are a massive global corporation, if you are Google or Amazon or JP Morgan Chase, and you want to do business in these massive booming Eastern markets, this framework is your new reality.
Mm.
Adhering to these strict ethical codes is no longer optional. It is the mandatory price of admission.
You can't just swoop in, extract everyone's data, run completely unregulated black box algorithms, and then funnel the profits back to California anymore.
The door is permanently closed to that kind of behavior. We are witnessing a historic reversal. For a very long time, the global South regions like the Middle East and South Asia, they're basically just passengers in the tech revolution. They sat quietly in the back seat while Silicon Valley drove the car wherever it wanted to go.
And now?
Now they are the pilots. They are building their own car, they are fueling it with their own data, and they are actively writing the traffic laws that everyone else has to follow. They are proving definitively that you don't have to choose between rapid innovation and strict regulation. You can actually have both.
That is a wild thought. We have spent so much time over the last few years just endlessly worrying about whether AI would take over the world that we didn't really stop to think about who would actually be writing the rules for it when it did.
And that raises a deeply important question for everyone listening to ponder. If the new gold standard for AI globally becomes ethical power, meaning extreme high speed combined with extreme high responsibility, What does that actually mean for the completely unregulated breakneck speed we still see in the West?
That's a great point.
If the UAE and India can successfully prove that you can regulate AI heavily without killing the innovation, what is the excuse for everyone else?
That is something I am definitely going to be thinking about for a long time. It is a brave new world out there, folks, and it looks like the geopolitical map is quite literally being redrawn as we speak. Thanks for diving deep with us today.
Always a pleasure to be here.
We'll catch you on the next one. Keep your eyes open.